Welcome to episode 71 of VFB Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language VFB Stuttgart fan podcast where our views are uninformed, unofficial, and usually unprepared. But Matt, I'm really prepared today because this is going to be an emotional episode for reasons we'll tell the listeners later. We are just, it's nostalgia. This is the episode where I introduce our origin story, where we talk about the first match that I ever actually remember, our old friend Daniel Ginchek. I mean, this is just going to be a blast from the past. There's going to be laughs. There's going to be tears. There's going to be tears. the whole gamut, Matt. This is just going to be a fantastic episode.
I was excited when we got on the call and you didn't give me any of this information ahead of time. So now I'm really excited. It's like you're in line for the roller coaster at Cedar Point and you're like two cars away from getting on the ride. I'm in. Let's go.
Let's get this roller coaster going. My name is Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. You can reach us on the Twitter machine at Valpe Americana. Matt, this is your 33rd episode. And so as we like to do, we're going to go through some famous number 33s. We got Fabian Bredlow, our current backup goalie, who apparently cannot beat out Florian Müller for the life of him. We've got Daniel Ginchek, who played from 2014 to 2018. We've got, Mario Gomez, who played, he wore 33s from 04 to 09. Of those three guys, Mario's probably the easy one, but any memories of those three that stand out?
I got vague memories of Ginchek because he was one of the big players when I first started watching really closely. He's the first guy, one of the first guys that I remember looking at him and being like, that dude is a freaking soccer player. That's the archetype. He's got the weird hat tattoos. He's got the absurdly expensive haircut. And then he got on the field and was like a baby giraffe running around out there and just never delivered up to his promise. Went to Wolfsburg, played good against us whenever we played against him, but just kind of faded off into the ether.
It's crazy that he's the guy, one of my favorite players. You can't see it here, but he's the program cover of the one match I went to. He scored the draw, the tying goal against Hamburg in 2018 match that I saw. He had so much potential. I think he played for the national team for a second in the youth level, the under 21 team. He was injury prone a lot. In fact, he's injured right now. Yeah. But I remember him distinctly because he was the guy. So the first match that I recall seeing that stuck in my memory was the 2014 season. The last match of the season, ironically against Paderborn, Stuttgart goes down a goal, draws, and in the 70th minute or so, Ginchek scores the goal that turns out to be the game winner that bumps them out of relegation into survival. Everybody goes bananas. At the time, I didn't understand why. Obviously, I understand why now. He was the savior at that point. Did you know he scored 21 goals in 67 matches for this club? I was kind of surprised by that.
I would never have guessed that his numbers were that good.
Yeah, it was crazy. And he was just, unfortunately for him, he was kind of made of glass, a lot of injuries and all that stuff. But he was the first and only goal I've seen scored in person. He scored the first goal in my memory. He's in the program behind me here. I'm sure if he's listening to this, he's like, whoa, dude, slow down a little bit. It's starting to get a little worrisome. Him and Martin Harnik opened up a meat shop in Stuttgart. I remember, that story. This is just, if you want to know why Travis is a Stuttgart supporter and why this podcast exists, the person you need to blame is Daniel Ginchek.
If he is listening to this, Daniel, I want to have words, not only for some of the horribly flubbed goals, not only because I needed to deliver some messages to Martin Harnik about where he took geometry class and how he was able to put balls over the bar from 6 inches out in front of goal. I still do not understand the physics behind that. But also, you've brought us all to this, and shame on you, sir.
That's right. You're the reason this is happening here. So that's what we got. All right. So we're going to get into some shout outs. We're going to get into transfer, just madness. We got two matches to cover. We got predictions, questions. Matt, you ready to get this party started?
I got a full mug. Let's go.
All right. First off, Matt, let's do some shout outs. We got for the OFC, our official fan club, congratulations. It's CLERKTM. Fourth time that he's won the Stuttgart Tippspiel. He won the prediction. Betty, if you're not sure what we're talking about, hop onto the website and there's an explanation there under the games tab. Steven is in first, but only 4 points ahead of Doug, our sporting director. Shout out to Village Footy, who crushed everybody this week in Fantasy Bundesliga, their fifth win. If you haven't listened to them, give them a listen on the YouTube or the Twitter. They do a great job of covering some Bundesliga matches and some fantasy stuff. Nobody won the Twitter score prediction because nobody put one in. So thanks to our listeners on that. My good luck beard is gone. I shaved that because we lost our previous match. So apologies to everybody. There's less of coverage of my face. I wanted to give a big shout out, though, to our good friend Martin Potnick on the Twitter. He put out a really cool Japanese-themed inspired logo yesterday that I would buy a t-shirt of. I don't know, Matt, if you saw it, but it was just sweet. Kind of an honor, the fact that a third of our starting lineup now is, you know, plays for the Japanese national team. It was sweet, and I would buy it in a second. Any shout outs on your end?
I was going to do the Martin Pinnock one. He had made that, I think, a year ago after the Legendo goal, and originally posted it. And then one of the Stuttgart newspapers, I think it was, or maybe it was on a blog. Anyway, some other media outlet decided to try and get cute and create a VfB Japan logo. And his repost was a, been there, done that. And his was markedly better. And yes, I would also put that on a t-shirt in a heartbeat. It's gorgeous.
It was fantastic. Yeah, if you give him a follow, Martin Panic 1893, he's got some really good stuff out there. Speaking of some good stuff, let's get into, you know, one of the reasons why people love Bundesliga is why a lot of people love the draft for fantasy football or the draft for the actual NFL football is players coming and going. So let's hop into part two and talk about some transfer mania right now. And I thought this was really interesting because I think Bruno is kind of setting the stage for if things go south. So hear me out on this. Bruno was said, quote, "I said from the beginning that we have an incredible board in front of us. Dot, dot, dot. But the competitors have struck. Augsburg has invested. Even Schalke has invested more." And I guess Schalke has no money at all. So Augsburg invested $5 million in five newcomers. Schalke borrowed five players. Bochum borrowed two players. Hertha didn't get a ton of players because they're in a ton of chaos right now that we'll get into later. But they did get Niederlacher from Augsburg, a striker who I've always liked. Any of those moves frighten you? And do you have any comments on Bruno's comment about, hey, I love our board. Also, we're doing nothing.
None of those really scare me. They all feel like moves you make when you're kind of floundering and trying to throw spaghetti at the wall and hope something sticks. The Bruno comment, it'd be great to hear it and be able to understand it in his native German, which I probably couldn't. But I want to know if it was, hey, even Schalke is investing, or it was even Schalke has invested. Like, there's context there that we're missing, but if nothing else, it feels like a little bit of a backhanded slap at Schalke. And if Bruno's going to talk some smack, I guess I'm here for it.
Well, it's weird because, so we ended up selling Nairoui Ahamada, 20-year-old, to Crystal Palace for somewhere between 10 to 12 million. It looks like it's 12 million that we sold him to. So let's talk about that for a second. This is a weird transfer because his value on transfer market is about 5 million. We sold him for more than twice that much. However, He was responsible for 2 assists, 2 goals, basically 40% of the goals the club has scored. He's been involved in, whether it's a hockey assist where he made the pass before the pass, the actual pass for the goal, or the goal itself. But he's also made 2 mistakes that cost us points. He got the red card. He was a classic Sven signing. He was young. Nobody knew who he was. He was French, which is super important. He was supposed to be the successor for Mangala. He showed glimpses of brilliance. But you and I talked the last 2 episodes that you joked. It's like, hey, if we can get 20 million for this guy, and you're like, yeah, I know it's not 20. Let's do it in a heartbeat. And I was totally on board. I know there's a lot of supporters like, ah, if we could have held on to this guy for another year, we could have doubled that transfer fee. I almost feel like we're going to upset some people. I'm not that upset at this move.
I actually really like this move. So I did say, you know, if we could get 20 mil for him, sell in a heartbeat, and was being facetious. But I can't remember if I talked to you about this or if I was talking to somebody else. I said, you know, his transfer market value is around 5. If we can realistically get 8, because it's a condensed market, that's probably a pretty good piece of business. Getting 12 million for a mistake-prone, unproven central midfielder, which is a position that we are pretty full at the moment, I think it's great. It's a good move.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's weird because it does speak somewhat to the chaos of the club. So you could say, listen, this is a Sven signing, and the only reason this club has money is because Sven signed these guys and we're able to sell them. And at some point, Volgamut and Verrill are going to pay the piper because those signings will be sold and we'll run out of all that potential. But I'm with you on this one. Getting 12 million for Ahamada, I thought Enzo Melot should have been playing that position for a little bit. And the thing that's wild, though, is maybe you and I are bonkers, because when I looked at the Premier League table, because I don't pay attention to it a lick, I was like, oh, okay, Crystal Palace must be fighting for relegation. They're mid-table. They're 11th or 12th.
So Palace is an interesting team, and I've been paying less attention to the Premier League this year than I did in years past. But Palace is always one of those teams that's just outside of the power players. They exist kind of around where my Southampton do, except for they're consistently a little better than Southampton, where like they don't invest enough to be dangerous to the top five, but they're not bad enough to be at risk of being a yo-yo club. So I know Palace has an ambitious owner. I know they've got ambitious leadership at their club, who've been around for a little while and have been starting to say for the last couple of years that, you know, it's time that we show everybody who Crystal Palace is. And they're a London-based club, right? This is not a small market team. They're one of the, 5 or 6 Premier League teams based in the greater London area. So they've got money. I'm not surprised at this at all, especially if they think this guy has what it takes to be a consistent Premier League contributor, and they think they can minimize the mistakes that he's been showing for us. They're in a position where they can gamble $12 million and hope it works out, whereas we're not.
You know, you follow the Premier League more than I do. Is what's nuts to me is we sold Kalajic for around 25. We sold Mangala for around 15. We end up selling Ahamada for around 12. Is this just a case of inflation, or is this a case where Ahamada has that much potential? And do you see him playing right away?
I don't know Palace's roster well enough, honestly, to tell you if he's going to be in right away. But there is – the English market is always inflated, right? The English teams have more money than anybody, barring like Real Madrid, because the EPL is the biggest league in the world. It gets the most coverage. They get the most TV money. And those teams that are consistently in the top half get more of that than other clubs do. So Palace can burn $12 million on a flyer of Ahamada. He's probably going to be, at the worst, a pretty good sub.
Wow. All right. What's interesting about this, so we end up selling, I think you and I are on the same page. We're okay with that, with the sell of him. The club is broke. They need the money. I'm not super excited about who is in charge of that money. And the other guy that didn't sound super excited, and this really surprised me, was Bruno. So let me give you some quotes from him. Quote, unfortunately, we are losing one of our most successful players. It's a shame, but the financial situation forces us to sell him. We'll only be able to invest a fraction of what we earned with Ahamada. And then he ends with this. The departure was, quote, not optimal for the sporting situation. I would rather continue with the players we worked with for 6 weeks than have newcomers, end quote. I have to be honest. I was really surprised to hear that, because that indicates a couple. It could just indicate that in the brief time Bruno was here, he really took a liking to Ahamada. It sure. could indicate that maybe we're totally wrong, and Bruno does have an ability to kind of latch on to the youth players. It could also indicate there's a bit of a dysfunction between the coaching staff and the board and the management, and things aren't as tight as maybe we thought they were. I don't want to put chaos where there's not chaos, because there's plenty of chaos in Stuttgart. But yeah. I was really surprised to hear Bruno lament publicly about this departure. But I'm going to take it back to where we started. Is Bruno setting the stage for if things go south, he can kind of CYA cover himself a little bit by saying, look, I told you we were in a tough spot. Look, I told you we had no money. Look, I told you we just got rid of one of our best players. That's why we finished where we finished.
That's a distinct possibility of, but that's almost like he kind of sees failure in the wings. And I don't feel, I said, you know, a week or two ago that he's a competitor, and I don't feel like, I don't want to believe that he's thinking about an exit strategy already. I can totally see him having seen Ahamada as a piece and an important piece for him. And anytime you take a tool away from somebody who's trying to do a job, even if it's not a tool they're actively using, they're probably going to get irritated. So maybe he's just lashing out a little bit. Maybe he doesn't feel like he was fully consulted or involved in the decision. Maybe he's buying into this idea of a youth movement. The guys we brought in would kind of counter that argument. But if nothing else, maybe he's trying to win a little bit of the public perception battle from people who liked Ahamada and saw him as a good piece going forward for the club.
Yeah, it's great. We wish him the best. It's kind of awesome that we've got Stuttgart players, Nottingham Forest, playing for Wolverhampton, now playing for Crystal Palace, and Kalajic and Mangala, and now Ahamada. So that is all great. It'll be interesting to see if Volgamut's transfers can make it over there, or if these are just, you know, Sven's transfers. He turned coal, so to speak, into diamonds over there. But we obviously wish him the best, wish him well. You know, hope he does well. Nico Gonzalez is rumored to go over there. I'm not sure if that transfer took place or not, but let's talk about the transfers of the guys who came in. And as you alluded to, the transfers of the guys who came in weren't youth players. So Genki Haraguchi, 31 years old, an attacking midfielder / left midfielder. He had a market value of around $2 million. So the rumor is we got him for about $1 million. Veteran player, over 150 Bundesliga matches. He's played for Hertha. He's played for Hanover. He's played for Union. He is a veteran of the relegation wars. 6 goals, 18 assists in his career. He's played midfield for the most part of his career. He's played 80 Zweite Liga matches. He's played over 70 matches for the Japanese national team. Vertical Pass wrote that he might be more suited to a 4-4-2, but he's coming from Union Berlin, 31 years old. He's now the oldest player on the roster next to Endo's, the second oldest now. Thoughts on Genki?
This is a really interesting addition because he does slot more in the central mid spot, which, as we were just talking, we're pretty full at. So how does that work out? Maybe he's got a little more flexibility than we know, or maybe there's plans to keep Endo on the wing. I don't know. I don't hate this transfer. The 2-year term on it, I don't love, is what I saw rumored, was that he's got a 2 years left on his contract, I think. We got him for $1 million. So it's not like we broke the bank for this guy. He's a senior dude who's had national team duty, who has been around the league, as you said. One of the things we've been saying this team is missing is a guy with experience who can calm things down when it gets chaotic. And he was playing reasonable minutes for a very good Union Berlin team. So if we can slot him into reasonable minutes on our squad as well, I gotta feel like that's an upgrade.
Yeah, he definitely fits into everything we've heard about Bruno. Veteran player, has played in the Bundesliga forever, so communication-wise, he is going to be able to communicate very well. The fact that Endo and him have played on the national team for a while, he didn't play on the World Cup team, but he played on the World Cup qualifying team, getting there, and he and Endo played in the midfield together. I have to admit, it's tough because the last 3 years we have been brought up to believe that we should only get players that are 18, 19, 20 years old, right? And that's exciting. That's fun because that's potential. And we haven't been excited about the Gonzalo Castros of the world who played, you know, with us for a little bit. Initially, when this signing was made, I, like everybody else, laughed. I was like, oh boy, here we go, Bruno. But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, all right, this guy's been in the Bundesliga forever. This guy has played with Endo. There's something to be said about the communication between him and Endo in the midfield that maybe we're lacking. This one, I didn't have a problem with. The one that I really struggled with, which is ironic, we'll talk about later, is this player, Gil Dias. So we got Gil Dias from the Portuguese league. This story is fantastic. So he has played for 7 countries and 12 different clubs. I should say 12 clubs in 7 different countries. He is a left wing, left back. His market value is around 2 million. So the rumor is we got him for about 1.5 to 2. He's been loaned over 7 times. He's played in Spain, France, Portugal, Greece, England. It's his first year in Germany. I'm going to have my geography students study him as a unit. Oh, just
to, totally. That's a brilliant idea.
About the different countries in Europe. He has 9 goals and 18 assists in 130 matches, so it's not like he's a threat, which will be ironic, as we'll talk about later. And so this dude has been everywhere. He can't find a club to stick with. He doesn't speak German, from what I can tell, so he doesn't fit the communication angle at all. This is the signing that I was like, what are you guys doing with this one? And I don't know if you read any of the Reddit or Twitter reviews. So what happened is people asked, Portuguese fans of Benfica, which is where we got him from, which is the top team in the Portuguese league, hey, what's up with this guy? And the laughter that you could hear from Portugal to Germany and all the way to Cleveland and to Michigan, they were so happy to unload this guy. It sounded like we got Philip Forrester's brother. I have to admit, I was not excited about this at all. What are your thoughts on Gil Dias joining the club?
As a child of the 1980s, Gil is a classic name for an 80s movie villain. And so I saw a dude named Gil, and I understand that's like it's pronounced like Jill, or I'll butcher it. It doesn't matter. We need Derek Ray on here to school us on how to properly pronounce Dias's name. I saw his name and I wasn't super excited. And then he's also got the villain like goatee thing going on. So maybe he's just going to be a little bit of a villain, and that wouldn't be a bad thing. We could use a little bit of villain on our team for a struggling team. It's concerning that everybody, all the Benfica supporters that we've heard from just cackled in our faces. I don't know. I'm hoping that Vogelmuth knows something we don't.
Before we saw him play today, here's what I thought. I was like, oh my gosh, we got rid of a 20-year-old potential player who has made a lot of mistakes. And I think in a year from now, we're going to be like, oh, he's worth so much money. But I'm on board. I'm going to say it right now in January. I'm on board with that transfer. Bringing in Haraguchi, I know, is a short-term situation. I wasn't super excited about it, but I understood it. I have to say this. The Gil Dias one, I didn't understand at all. That seemed like a panic transfer. I get Thiago Tomás is on the left and he's hurt. I get Borna's hurt, but it just seemed like a panic transfer to me. But then there were two comments that I read. One was from a Benfica fan and one was from a Union Berlin fan. And it was sort of meant as a cut down of Stuttgart that these guys aren't playing a lot of minutes in Union Berlin. And they're not considered very good in Benfica because the expectations for Union Berlin and for Benfica are far different than what the expectations are for VfB Stuttgart right now. And the Union Berlin supporter who said that wasn't saying it as a negative, whereas a Benfica fan was. But I thought those were actually two fantastic points, that these are three clubs, Benfica, Union Berlin, and Stuttgart, that are in three completely different situations, right? Benfica is playing Champions League. Union Berlin is probably a Europa League team. And we are a team that is just fighting to stay in the first tier. So maybe Haraguchi and maybe Diaz, maybe they're not top tier players that can make an impact, but maybe they're players that at the bottom half of the table will actually be big impact, significant guys.
That's a really good point. And you know, we're just trying to survive, right? So if Diaz can come in, bang in a few goals, Haraguchi can come in and stabilize the midfield, even if they're both just backup players. Like Haraguchi is an insurance policy in case Endo gets hurt. And Diaz being on the left really is something I had not really thought about, but we are really thin on the left-hand side of the field. So if Diaz can just be a warm body there and not pull a Muller and totally bone us in a few games, maybe that's worth bringing him in. I don't know. I'm interested to see what he does over a couple weeks. I was excited about what happened today. But both of these guys, I think, might make a lot of sense for our team, given where we are and what we're trying to accomplish this year. And if they don't work out, it's not like we won't be able to afford to rebuild a quarter of the stadium again because of the money we spent on them.
Well, I wanted to mention this later, but you brought it up now about, so by the time anybody listens to this nonsense, they'll know that Valpe ended up winning the Pokal match against Paderborn today in dramatic fashion, because that's the only way we win or lose is in dramatic fashion. Nothing is easy. So Gil Diaz played a huge role in that. The rumor is we got him for about $1.5 to $2 million. And I think this is so hilarious. By advancing to the Elite Eight, as you will, in the Pokal, which won't be announced for another couple of weeks, the club earns about 1.7 million euro for that.
For himself.
Right. So it's almost like it's a wash at this point. I think it's so serendipitous at this point. Before we move on to the next part, we look into the matches a little bit, like you alluded to with some boneheaded plays, which we'll certainly cover. Is there anybody you would have liked to have seen come in, or anybody you're surprised that is still with the club right now? Because Borna Sosa was a rumor. Dino, they're still here.
I could have seen, if Sosa was healthy, I think he's gone. I think that's too tempting of a paycheck for the team right now in our financial situation. Dino's great for us, but I wonder how much a bigger team would see him as an answer versus kind of a weird, like, he's a defender, but he likes to, you know, trundle up and down the field. as our former assistant coach Steve Cherundolo was famous for doing in the U.S. men's national team. I don't know that he's a player that necessarily fits a lot of places. I love Dino. Don't get me wrong at all. And I'm grateful he's here. But I could see some teams being a little gun shy about him. I'm a little surprised that the Luca Waldschmidt from Wolfsburg thing didn't come through. I talked to a buddy of mine who's a Wolfsburg supporter. And he referred to him kind of like we were referring to Amada, as a guy with a lot of promise that they were looking forward to, but didn't really have a place in the club right now. And so nobody's really sure what's going on. A loan spell for him down with lowly Stuttgart could have been really good for all parties involved. And I'm a little surprised to see that didn't happen.
Yeah, we may have Austin on later, who's a Freiburg supporter, to do some predictions with us. And I asked him about Waldschmidt. And that's where he had his big breakout, and before he was sold to Spain, and he still had a good season in Spain and before he came back to the Bundesliga, and he hasn't really kind of caught that fire again. And he really talked me up into it. And our good friend Martin Ponick talked us up on it about this guy. The only thing I was worried about with Luca Waldschmidt, and the loan did not go through, was where are we going to put him? I struggle with this 4-3-3 to know where do you put this guy? Because Gerassi is going to be up on the front, and then you're going to have two guys on the wing, whether it's Perea, whether it's Furyk, whether it's Thiago, whether it's Silas. Where do you put Luka Waldschmidt? So, and then he scored a goal in their Bundesliga match prior to the transfer window. So maybe he upped his value a little bit. I don't know, but yeah, it would have been interesting to see him, but Borna's still here. Dino's still here. Those are the two guys that we got. I mean, so far, I guess.
Not a bad thing.
All right. All right. So we're going to move on to part three, and we're going to talk about some things that aren't so good, which are the matches that took place. Matt, what do you say? You ready to go on and talk about your good friend, Flo Mueller?
Can't wait.
See. So, Matt, here we go. Part three. We had to do it. Let's lead off with the Bundesliga match. We played Leipzig on Friday at Leipzig. It was a 2-1 loss. I think the highlight was we made a drinking game bingo card that somebody had proposed to us based on different talking points. So I think maybe we'll put that out there. I had zero hope going into this one. So based on my expectations that were so low, the guys actually did really well, especially in considering the skeleton crew that they sent over to Leipzig.
It was hard in the moment. I was feeling pretty frustrated watching this game. Felt like there were some really clear opportunities to make things happen that we just didn't take advantage of. But in hindsight, yeah, we went pretty much toe-to-toe with a club that's much better than us on the table. And we held our own. So, yeah, all right.
Yeah, it's funny that 24-hour rule is so important in so many things. I think I had something saved in my drafts that I was going to send out, and I was just like, it was just frustration. And I deleted it within 24 hours, but it was just like other clubs can get results against the big teams, right? And it's just, why can't we? And then I was like, well, we got a result against Bayern Munich, right? So we're not unique and we're not special. This happens. And then, like you said, we sent a lot of guys who hadn't played. So our lineup was Wagnermann, Ito, Anton, Stenzel in the back. So Stenzel got his first start. Wagnermann got his first start. Nardi, Karazor, Endo. So that was the same. Furyk was up front. Pfeiffer was up front. Castanares was up front. So we had two new guys up front. We just had so many guys that were out. What else were we going to expect? I think that's the thing that I think you said it perfectly. If you took a step back, even though this was a 2-1 loss, I don't think we were ever really in this match. I know we were close. I know we had a chance at the end, but that handball penalty we got at the end to get that penalty kick, and then the super sloppy penalty kick that Furyk made. I mean, I don't know. It was a 2-1 result. I think it looked better on the scoreboard than it did on the pitch.
Yeah.
How off base am I there?
We got what we deserved out of that game, which was not much. No points, but our goal differential didn't get killed. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I'm not losing sleep over that game.
Right. So let's talk. I want to talk four players in this match, maybe five players. So let's start. We'll go small house to big house here, but we'll start with Bruno's doghouse. And that seems to be Enzo Melot. So Enzo Melot seemed to end 2022 on a high note. He seemed to be playing a lot during the friendlies, and he has not seen the pitch at all. Now, Bruno put out a communique today that the reason why Enzo's not playing is because he's just not training hard enough, and that they sat down with Enzo and they showed him why he's not playing, and that, you know, he's got to get his act together a bit. Maybe saying his act together is a little bit too harsh, but he's got to start training harder. And so that brought out some critics who said, yeah, you know what, players love being called out in public. Whereas other people said, well, you know what, he's a professional. This is what he's got to do. Let's talk Enzo Melot for a second. Bruno says he's not training well enough. I thought he should have been playing ahead of Ahamada. What are your thoughts on Enzo not playing, not training? What's going on?
It's interesting. I expected after the preseason he had, I expected to see a lot more of him. I was really excited about the idea of seeing a lot more of him. But if he's not training hard, you can't start him because that sends a horrible message to the whole team. And we saw, how many years did we see Alexandre Maxim on the field, just sandbagging it. And then, you know, you hear, oh, he's not training well. And then he goes out and he plays out of his mind for three games. And everybody loves him. Oh, he's turned the corner. And the cycle repeats. So I'm bummed out, but he's also a young guy. And maybe he did so well in training camp that he thought he had made it and he was in. And he could coast a little bit. And maybe his head got a little too big. And he needed to be brought down to earth a little bit. I don't know. And really, the only one who does know is Bruno. And some guys probably respond really, really poorly to be called out in public. And others take it as motivation or a shot at them. And they're going to prove the coach wrong.
Yeah.
And great. So I'm hoping Labadie is playing chess here with some pieces we're unaware of. And that I would love to see Enzo Melot. And really, Bruno's got to be hoping he gets it together, too, because when he's playing well, he's a really dangerous piece.
I just don't think he fits on this club with what Bruno wants to do at this point. And that pains me because I like Enzo Melot. But if we're going to run this 4-3-3 and you have Haraguchi now and you have Endo now, I just don't know where he fits. And I think Omar Baez is a guy who's never going to play for this club, who we've talked about in the past. Enzo Melot is not going to play. I think part of the reason we got rid of Bahamana is I think Bruno's playing check, playing poker a little bit. I don't know where these guys fit. What I see with what Bruno wants is he wants box-to-box guys who are going to be like Philip Forster types, Endo types. And what I mean by that is guys that are just going to go all out all the time. And there's not a lot of room for Maxime types or Enzo Melot types that are offensively creative guys who don't have defensive prowess and they don't have defensive capabilities to be physical. I think Enzo is done on this club. It's the other guy I think is done on this club is Tungai Koulibaly. I was shocked to see him get in the match after being in the doghouse, after getting, if people don't remember, he was one of the players that was sent to the showers during the friendlies. He hadn't seen much of the pitch or even been on the bench at all. So he was on the bench for this match because so many people were hurt. He actually got in the match. I was shocked to see him get in. I think the Koulibaly experiment is over. Whether it's being in Bruno's doghouse, not having a position to play on this team. And I'll be honest, based on the 15 or 20 minutes that I saw of him against Leipzig, Matt, I think I'm done with the Koulibaly experiment. I just think he's a little too wild for this club at this point.
Koulibaly definitely does not fit into the Labadia system. It's much more structured. It's much more disciplined, role-based. He was an interesting component for Matarazzo, who had a much more kind of free-flowing, chaos-generating offense. And that's we've referred to Koulibaly repeatedly as an agent of chaos, and that's what he's best at, is just go in there and run real fast all over the place and let's see what happens. And I don't think that's what Labadia wants to do. And I don't think that's good for the team right now. I don't think we can afford to have one guy out there just wreaking havoc and not necessarily accomplishing anything.
I wasn't super impressed with the performance he put on the pitch against Leipzig either.
No.
Yeah.
It was a lot of kind of what I found him very frustrating as a player, even under Matarazzo. And I saw the potential and how I could see how he would fit into the Matarazzo system, but just like lots of runs, lots of wasted energy, lots of wasted effort, working really hard to not really accomplish anything. And it's like he would do a thing and I found myself wondering, what was the point of that?
And it seems like Perea is taking his spot now. He's all over the pitch. He just seems a little bit more structured and a little bit more offensively inclined than Koulibaly is. Let me talk to you about Castanaris, Stuttgart-born player, young kid, was on the youth national teams, 6'1", center forward or left wing. He seemed to play really well. I was really surprised he got subbed off at halftime. Didn't play today in the Pokal. Thoughts on Castanaris? Thoughts on him getting subbed off at half?
You got to wonder if there's some fitness concerns. We know Labadie is a fitness nut and is a hardcore about endurance training. So maybe there's some of that. Maybe Castanaris is coming off a little knock that we're unaware of. Hard to say. It seems in his short tenure, it seems like Labadie is going to be pretty tight-lipped about that stuff. So I don't know. I was really excited at the progress he made in the half that he played, and also very surprised to see him coming off. But it might be a situation too where you're easing a young dude in and you know, don't want to put too much on his plate too quick and just kind of see what happens.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. I was excited by what I saw. He was subbed off for Perea, who everybody knows that I've been wanting to see for a while. So I wasn't sad about that part, but I just thought he was playing pretty well. So hopefully he can get back on the pitch. Let's talk about the biggest thing that everybody was talking about. And we've talked about him a lot on this podcast, Florian Mueller. He had just, let me put it this way. Here was the most damning open quote that was stated about the mistake he made around the 25th minute. Quote, the ball is 35 meters away from the goal. There is a wall. The gate is 7 meters wide and there is one with gloves in it, the goalie. The gate can already be prevented. End quote. The person who said that was the opposing team's coach, Marco Rosa.
Ouch.
That is such a yikes comment. So let's talk about flow. Let's not talk about flow, what we've talked about. Because everybody knows how you feel about him here. Kicker gave him a 5, the lowest rating of the day. He's played 48 games for Stuttgart, only 5 clean sheets, none at home, by the way. I was really surprised that Bruno started him in the Pokal match, but then I wasn't, because who else is there, Matt? Who else is there?
So I want to say one thing about never trust a Florian, and then we can move on. I found it really interesting on the broadcast that the commentators were trying to find reasons why that ball might have went in and really struggling with it. And they made a valiant effort, and good on them for trying to come up with some reason for the novice viewer to think maybe that was a harder than it looked shot to stop. And boy, they just kind of gave up after a minute or two, but good effort, guys. A plus for going out there and giving it your best. I don't know who else we have. Like, we've got Breadlow. Beyond that, I literally do not know who's on the squad. I have looked and the names went in and out of my brain faster than my wife asked me to pick something up at the store before I leave the house. Breadlow was not good before he came to Stuttgart. Nobody was particularly excited about his signing. But at this point, I think we've got a player in Florian Müller who has shown us that he's got tremendous physical ability and a tremendous ability for his brain to get in the way of that physical ability. And then we've got an unknown for us in Fabian Breadlow. And for my money, you got to give Breadlow a shot. If for no other reason than to send a message to Müller of you cannot keep doing this, I don't care how bad he is, I'll start him if you keep blowing games. 2 games in a row. Well, one he lost for us, and the other came a hair's breadth away from losing for us.
I think they signed Breadlow because they wanted to have a backup goalie who was comfortable being a backup goalie, so that Florian could just concentrate on being the starting goalie. I think Fabian is no pressure on him. You mentioned he had the 1 year he started in the Bundesliga, he had a rough season for Nuremberg. He let up 28 goals in 13 matches. But here's the crazy stuff. Flo has gotten statistically worse as he's been with Stuttgart. 2 years ago, in 30 games, he let up 46 goals. Last year, he let up 52 goals in 30 games. So far this season in 18 games, he's given up 32 goals. So he is expected to give up more goals than before. And I know the defense, Pellegrino's offense, was predicated on aggressiveness. So they put the defense under pressure. But if you look at the XG stuff, and I'm not going to get into that, he's always letting in about 5 to 6 more goals than whatever the XG is.
Yeah.
And I don't pretend to be a statistic, you know, expert here, but there is something to be said about the eye test. And he looks amazing on reflex plays that are close up to him. But Ted mentioned this last week, that the last three goals he's let in have been from distance. And there's just a problem there. But here's what Bruno did. Bruno said, listen, he's going to start in the Pokal, and he's going to be our starter going forward. And I think he's just trying to send him some confidence, in part because that's what you do, but in part because there's nobody there to challenge him. So we may, as supporters, we have no choice but to get behind Flo because he's our guy. I will be shocked if they make a change before match day 34. I will also be shocked if he is our goalie on match day one next season.
I have a choice, and I choose to not get behind Flurry Miller. At this point, bring a kid up from the youth academy. Give him a shot. Go to the local, whatever the equivalent of beer league soccer is, in Stuttgart, find the best keeper in the best league, sign him to a 1-week contract and see what he can do. Like, we are putting the effort of 10 guys at risk every single week because we've got one guy who has a complete mental lapse 3 to 4 times per game. And that's what bones us. And it's unforgivable. It's not that he lacks the capability. It's that he loses focus, or he wandered over to the flipping sideline during the Pokal match and wasn't even the commentators on that. Poor Dino Mavropanos got credited with an OG. He should not. That should be on Muller. He kicks the ball back to the middle of the box where it's reasonable to expect Mar to be, because if the ball gets turned over, that's where he needs to be to deal with that. And Muller was outside of the box toward the sideline where you would be if you were a right back defending. What was he even doing? Like, I've coached 9-year-olds who responded better than that. It's absolutely absurd. And to come out and say he's our guy going forward no matter what is, that's just it's ridiculous.
I think you brought up a fantastic segue. Let's move into the Pokal match, which everybody knows at this point. Thankfully, like Stuttgart does, in the last seconds, Stuttgart was able to get the win to go to the Elite Eight on this. Before we get into the thoughts on the match, let's just talk about that. So in the fourth minute of the match, Anton throws the ball back to Dino. Dino does one of his power kicks. I will say this in Florian's defense, Dino has no touch. The guy has absolutely no softness to anything he does. Everything he does, from his abs to his kicks to his headers, sharp, sharp, sharp. My wife was actually watching that goal with me, and it was a very touching moment because we actually got to watch the game together, and she's like, what just happened? I was like, honey, I don't know. And she started to diagram what had happened. She's like, I was like, well, whose fault do you think it is? And probably because Dino's so just attractive, she blamed Florian. She's like, what was he doing? And I don't know if you watched one of the Minions movies where they're stuck in an ice cave and they've lost all hope and they're playing a soccer match, and the one Minion kicks the ball into the net and it goes into the net, and about 30 seconds later the goalie dives to try to stop it. She's like, that's what it reminded me of. And I was I've never loved you more than I love you right now.
Yeah.
I don't know whose fault it was, but it was just a bad start to the match. It was two rough goes in a row for Flo. I'm willing to parcel out the blame a little bit more. Maybe there was a lack of communication there. But it certainly doesn't help his case.
No, and there's one other thing that I noticed, and I did watch that replay 5 or 6 times because I was just trying to wrap my head around what exactly happened, and honestly was trying to find a reason why it happened and why I shouldn't just light Muller on fire, which is my immediate tendency. He was way out of position, which is something we've griped about. Well, I'll own this. I've griped about endlessly, right? His positioning off ball is terrible. So he's way out of position. And then you're right, Dino did. He booted that pretty good. But also, it's one of those situations where if you're going to make that pass, you got to make it, and you got to make it firm, because you don't want a forward going and intercepting it on the way to the keeper. So it needs to be a solid pass back. The thing that really is stuck in my craw about this is even less than the bad positioning, which was terrible. When he goes back and makes a dive to try and save it, he starts to dive headfirst and then kicks his feet up. You're the goalie, dude. Use your hands. Save the shot.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he would have given him a free kick from that position, but it was a bad.
But I think yes, but given the options, take a chance with free kick.
Yeah, it's that happened to Sven Ulreich in Champions League final, I think a couple of years ago when he was stepping in for Neuer. He brain farted and forgot what he could do there. Ended up giving up an easy goal. It was classic. You're just watching. It was funny because the rest of the match, whenever Stuttgart did a back pass, I don't know if you heard the Paderborn supporters, but they started doing the, oh, every single time. And I was like, oh, geez, Florian's got to be struggling. I know how that.
You know what? Hats off to the Paderborn fans for that. That's grade A trolling, and good on you for it.
He needs a good match. I mean, he just needs. I don't even know if he needs a clean sheet. He just needs one of those matches where he doesn't give up the goal. Hopefully it's this weekend against Bremen, because I don't think we're going to sum him out. I think he's our guy. And if he's our guy, he's got to get his head on straight. You know, let's move in. The Pokal match, we go in. At halftime, they put in Haraguchi in for, I think it was...
Bagaman,
thank you.
Yep.
You looked really good.
He did.
He looked... Really, I haven't seen us have an attacking midfielder who could make that pass, whether it was forward or back, but mostly forward. I haven't seen a guy like him in a long time. I mean, well, maybe since Mangala, but Mangala was a little bit streaky in that. And maybe it's just a case of this guy being 31 years old. He knows what he's supposed to do. He's played with Endo before, so they have some communication. But to throw him in right away, I was like, huh, that's kind of a bold move. But he looked good.
Yeah, I was confused when I saw the substitution. Like, Wagnermann's the left back. What are we doing? The subs didn't make a ton of sense to me. And I was kind of only half watching the game for chunks because I was technically at work today. but yeah, the stretches where I was able to keep an eye on Haraguchi, he did look fantastic, and what had me thinking this was a much smarter signing than any of us realized.
Yeah, I think they moved Nardi around a little bit. You know, we had Furich up front, we had Perea up front, but he looked just really sharp. His passes looked really sharp. Statistically, he had a really good match. In the 60th minute, Luca Pfeiffer comes in. In the 82nd minute, Gil Dias comes in. Obviously, you know, Haraguchi was the big one that looked great. But let's talk about, listen, we all know what happened. Stuttgart dominated this match possession-wise. The shots, yeah. I think, were 22-1 or something ridiculous like that. The corners were 17-0 or something like that. There's a fantastic Gerolaitis quote. He lost to Jimmy Connors in tennis 16 times in a row, and on the 17th time, he finally beat him. And the reporters asked him about it. He said, listen, nobody beats Vitas Gerolaitis 17 times in a row. I always love it. Yeah, it's a great quote. So on the 17th corner, we finally put one away. Watching this match, I never thought we were out of it because we were dominating this match. We couldn't do what we haven't been able to do all year, which is finish. But
yeah,
I mean, if nothing else, we showed we can compete in the second division right now.
When was the last time we scored on a corner kick? Because I feel like it's been a hot minute.
I don't want to say it was Legendo, but
I think it might have been.
Yikes. It's been a while. I mean, and here's the other thing I do want to say is I'm a Valdemar Anton fan, but can we please stop the Anton at right back experiment? It's just not working. And none of us are huge. Pascal Stenzel is going to take us to the Champions League, but he at least knows the position, and the crosses into the box were crosses. I love Valdi. I think he's eventually going to be phased out because I don't know where he's going to play on this team at some point.
Yeah.
Dan Axel comes back and if Dino's here and if Ito's playing, but you're not putting him in a position of success by keeping it right back. It makes no sense to me.
No, it's he looks lost and you feel for the guy who you know is a good center back, playing out of position and looking confused and unsure of himself, which is really unusual for a battering ram dude like Anton. Almost makes me think, like, why not put Ito out there? He's a much more positionally flexible player. I know usually when we play him on a wing back, it's on the left-hand side, but I think he could probably handle it. He's a good player. I think he could do it. And Anton, I don't. It's like he's been driving one car for so long that he sat in a different one and he forgot where the steering wheel was and what the shifter looked like.
I think Baldy, the biggest thing for him is his communication on the pitch, right? I mean, it was 30 seconds into the match and he was screaming at the sideline ref for an out-of-bounds play. So I love his passion. I love his communication, which is, I'm sure Bruno loves. But the offense just doesn't exist on that side of the pitch with him. Yeah. And that's not his fault because that's not his forte at all. So I don't know where he's eventually going to end up. But if there's one thing I tell Bruno, please stop putting Anton in, you know, at right back. The other thing I'd like to say, I don't know if you saw, but so – the game is 1-1. We score on this fantastic Gildias goal. There was a pass from, I believe it was Endo, to Luca. Luca kind of fluffed the pass a little bit, but he did get it to Gildias. I don't know if you've ever had a debut on your first day at work, like Gildias had on his first day at work, but that was a fantastic shot. He may never score a goal ever again. God bless him. After everything that we heard on Reddit, on Twitter about how awful this guy is, for him to have that start with the club, you know, kudos to that guy. And then the second thing is, as the match went into added time, it's 1-1. We're dominating like we've been dominating possession, everything. I don't know if you saw it. So the 90th, it's like there was 4 minutes added. It was 93 and 45 seconds, 93 and, you know, 50 seconds. Stenzel gets a corner, kicks it. We miss the kick. It goes out of bounds. It's another corner for us. But it, now at this point, it's 94 plus 3 seconds or something. Mm-hmm. We're over the time, and we get another kick, another corner. Did you see Seiru Girasi's face right before that corner took place?
I did not.
He looks at either a Paderborn player or the official with this, you probably shouldn't have done that look. You got to see it. It's all over Twitter from the Stuart Sport. He just has this poop-eating grin on his face like, we just got an extra kick, didn't we? And then the announcer, Gary Preston, mentions, he's like, I don't know what Seiru Girasi is giggling about. That's weird. And then after he scores the goal, he's like, I think I know what he's giggling about. It was so bizarre. And then the Paderborn coach went nuts at the officials because he thought the time should have ended. Shout out to Seiru Girasi for this. Shout out to Gildias for this. Any last comments on either of those two guys or just the resilience of the guys?
It's great to see the trend of the team never quitting, never giving up, continue, even after the transition from Matarazzo to Lavadia. That was something we credited Matarazzo for pretty consistently, but it might just be in the DNA of these players, which is pretty awesome. I haven't seen a thunder goal like Diaz scored from a Stuttgart player in quite a while. That was phenomenal. And if Girasi, if this dude keeps it up the way he's been, he's going to be etching himself into the Stuttgart Hall of Fame here real fast. He's one of the brightest spots on a team that desperately needs some bright spots. And he's so much fun to watch.
He is completely blowing out my expectations for him. I'm shocked at how well he's playing. And thank goodness we got him. Hopefully he can put up some points on the board, you know, this weekend. You know, speaking of this weekend, why don't we move into some news and headlines, questions, and some predictions as we wrap this up? What do you think?
Let's go.
So news and headlines, there's really nothing that hits us in part four. Bayern is reloaded. They've picked up all kinds of players, but that doesn't really impact us. I don't know if you saw the Union Berlin and the Leipzig trash talk. Union tried to sign some guy, and Leipzig posted on their Twitter accounts like, oh, you're signing that guy? And the response that Union brought back was like, oh, you guys have tradition? You know, something like
that.
So there's a little trash talk that our old friend Freddie Bobic has been outed as sporting director at Hertha Berlin. So a number of their transfers have fallen through at the last minute. Don't know if any of those stories matter to you at all, but that's pretty much it we got for headlines.
I just love a bit of chaos that's not happening in Schwabia.
It's so nice for it not to be us. Oh my gosh. All right, so let's go on to part five questions. DC Vinneman asks, or states really, you know, Valpe should forget about the Pokal to concentrate on staying in the league. I love this question because every year, I think the first match or two, you're like, eh, I don't care. But as you get further and further in the tournament, you're like, I really want this. And Matt, I really want this.
I may be in the minority here. I love the Pokal. I hate when we lose early in the Pokal rounds to a lower division team. It bothers me, feels embarrassing and annoying. And for a team, like we said, that's in desperate need of some bright spots, some Pokal glory, be a nice bright spot.
Oh my gosh, I would love it. So Union Berlin beat Wolfsburg. There'll be some matches coming up this week and next week. And so the reveal of who will be playing in the final eight won't be revealed for another 2 weeks. Hopefully we get a lucky draw. And who knows? The crazy thing is Bruno, I believe, has 10 wins and only 3 losses in his 13 Pokal matches. How nuts is that?
That's insane.
It's crazy. So I would love a chance to get some hardware. And if it's a Pokal, you know, so be it. Give it to me. So DC, I understand 100% what you're saying. Focus on the league. That's what's most important. But you know what? Bruno's going to play these guys into the until they're exhausted anyway. So you might as well have some Pokal fun. And then Tyler asks, is Gildias the greatest Valpage signing ever? Yes.
As of today, right now, yeah, 100%. Absolutely unquestionable.
I was thinking about his question, though.
Tyler, I'm insulted you even asked.
Yeah, Tyler. We are all buying Gildias.
Who do you think you are?
Did you see that the club store was selling Gil Dias and Haraguchi jerseys with free flock?
No.
I thought that was a pretty bold move on the club's part.
The shop that valpe.de is not my homepage like it is some people's, Travis.
I'm just surprised that somebody's like, oh my God, Dad, Gil Dias just got signed.
Right. Somebody did.
Could you imagine if you were a Gil Dias fan, though, and the number of clubs he's played for? That's an expensive jersey collection.
Got a full wardrobe, buddy.
Who is your best transfer in recent memory, though, that Stuttgart has brought in? I'm going to say Mario Gomez. You know, he was brought in that 1 year. He helped save us. We ended up finishing seventh place, I think. I'm trying to think of somebody else.
Gomez is a great one. Sasha Kalajic might be the biggest guy that came out of nowhere and then all of a sudden was a huge impact player. You could maybe make an argument for Benjamin Pavard, but he turned out to be a putz, so I don't want to think anything positive about Pavard.
You know what? Let's move into really non-positive things. Let's deal with our predictions here. We had all the results go our way over the course of the weekend. Freiburg beat Augsburg. Union beat Hertha. Gladbach beat Hoffenheim. Mainz beat Bochum. So where we stand right now is Schalke's got 10 points. Hertha's got 14. Bochum has 16. We are in 15th with 16, but on goal there. Augsburg's got 18. Hoffenheim is in our first place, Sven, 13th with 19 points. So everything is still to play for. We are hosting Bremen this weekend. We've played them 111 times, 39 wins, 38 losses. This is as close as can be. We had that unlucky draw on the road in match day 2 way back in the beginning of the season. They opened up with a 4-minute goal, but then we came back. Endo, Silas put goals up, but then they scored in the 95th minute. We're 4 wins and 2 draws in the last 6 matches. So we've got a pretty good recent record against them. Matt, thoughts going into this one?
Bremen was struggling until their last match, which they won pretty decisively. I feel like they're a team we should be able to beat. I feel like they're a club that's stumbling a little bit right now and asking some pretty serious questions of themselves. And so are we. And I'm hopeful that we have better answers than they do this weekend. And I think this is a game we can and probably should win. So we'll probably lose by 5.
You know what is the big answer to the question? How did we meet? So I remember I was sitting at a local pub watching Bremen. I think this was back in 2016. And I had posted some things on Reddit. And this was a huge match. I think it was match day 32 or something like that. And we needed a big win. And you had reached out to me on Reddit and said, hey, I've seen you post some stuff. And you say you live in the States. There's a few of us that are on Slack, the communication device. Why don't you reach out? And I was like, oh, okay. So we were texting, you know, back and forth during the match. And Stuttgart came out and they did lay an egg. They lost 6-2. It was, who was our old friend, Teton was in goal. Harnik was up front. It was a classic just meltdown, losing 6-2. That, Matt, is when you and I first met. What do you think of that?
I had forgotten about Premyslav Teton until just now. And I will say it's a testament to how well we get along and the meshing of our twisted senses of humor that we are still talking.
Oh my gosh. Jurgen Kramny was coach. We had Dadavi, we had Insua, we had Georg Niedermeyer was captain that match. Oh my gosh. Those are some memories that, well, you said you forgot, but not anymore.
I'm trying to drink them away, but they keep coming back.
All right. So what do you think the betting websites have this one? Who do you think is the favorite? Valve Bay at home or Bremen on the road?
I bet they've got this as a pick 'em. A stretch would be Stuttgart by half a goal.
It is the stretch. So Stuttgart is favored by half a goal in this one. Now, before you pick this, I just want you to know you're leading in our group wagering of predictions. You and I are tied, though, in Stuttgart predictions. We're both 10-7. So we've got that tie there going. So let's wrap this podcast up. How do you see this one ending? Who do you got?
No pressure there. Stuttgart 2-1, and Müller's going to let in a howler that has us all wondering how he shows his face outside of the stadium again.
I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go 2-1 because part of me always says that the club that plays a match midweek is going to struggle on Saturday or Sunday, and then we always lose to that club on Saturday and Sunday. So I'm going to flip the script. We're going to turn the tables on Bremen. We've got a wager with the not easy green being easy being green guys that if we win, they will play our theme song on their podcast, which we don't have one. So it'll just be dead silence, which I hope they have to do. If they win, we have to play their theme song, which is I Would Walk 500 Miles. So that's actually not
good
a
song. Yeah, that's
good song. Unlike this podcast, unfortunately. That's what we call a segue in the business, my friend.
Ouch.
Yep. All right, Matt. So we got a Pokal win. We had a league loss, but we got a big match coming up. You know what? Any last thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
Fingers crossed we can pull it out this weekend.
Let's do it, guys. Let's do it, Bruno. Let's
get some Forza VFA.
All right, Matt, thanks so much for joining us this week, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Trey.
All right, welcome back to our really additional Patreon account that, well, nobody's paid for because we don't know how to do any of that. But what we're going to do in this extra part, even though Matt and I have wrapped up, is kind of give our thoughts on the Bundesliga as a whole. Because, well, we don't know anything about our own club, so we might as well start talking about everybody else's club too. And to help me do that is longtime contributor, member of the podcast, hasn't been on in a while because he's been so busy. But Austin, welcome back to the pod. How are you doing, my man?
Doing good. There was a rumor out there that if you were too high on the table, you didn't want us on the show anymore. I had figured that was the reason I hadn't been on in a while.
No, we just didn't want you on, period. That was pretty much it. But the reason why we want you to help us with predictions of the league is because as a supporter of Freiburg, your club is the highest on the table of anybody on the podcast. So we figured, you know what? You know what it's like to be at the top. So maybe you can help us with some of these, you know, top tier matches, starting with the match on, looks like Friday, we've got Augsburg hosting Bayer Leverkusen. Augsburg is getting half a goal in this one. Augsburg is towards the bottom of the table. Bayer is towards the top of the table. How do you see this one going? Who you got?
You know, this is an interesting match to me because Leverkusen, they're one of the hottest teams right now. Besides their hiccup last week against Dortmund, they'd won 5 games in a row. Ooh. And so that's impressive. And I picked them to win the league this year. So that's even more impressive. But the thing with Augsburg, I'm mispronouncing things as I usually do, but
that's on brand.
Since week 5, they haven't had any results that have been more than one goal. So the thing is that has no bearing in my prediction here, but I'm going with Leverkusen because I need Leverkusen to be shooting up that table, because I can't remember what we bet in our preseason predictions, but I need that, whatever it is.
Yeah, that would require us to go back and listen to one of our own episodes, and that is a tall task indeed. But I like your prediction because Augsburg is in 14th place on the table, one spot above Stuttgart and 2 points. So, yeah, Leverkusen getting a result there would be good for us. What about Bochum hosting Hoffenheim? How do you see that one going? Bochum is the home team, mm-hmm. and they're getting – half a goal. So they're the underdog in this one, even though they're at home. Bochum is 16th place. Hoffenheim is only 13th place, though.
Yeah, I'm not impressed by Hoffenheim this year at all. I mean, I don't trust them. But you know what? I am going to take them just because, you know, Stuttgart needs them to win this game.
Yeah, it's only a 3-point difference. That's what's crazy. Hoffenheim has 19 points. Bochum has 16 points. This one's really nuts. And Bochum seems to have played well, but they're giving up a lot of goals. Yeah, here's a big match for you guys, actually. Let's talk about Freiburg. Let's see who we got. Freiburg is on the road. They're the underdog by half a goal. How do you see this one?
I see this. If it's close, I see Freiburg taking at least the spread. But I just don't have any confidence after the winter break. Freiburg has come back and we just been, I mean, it's just been zestless, if that's a word. It's just been
it is now.
But they just haven't impressed me to watch them, and that saddens me. But I just think Dortmund, again, I don't think Dortmund's gonna win league, and I think they're gonna blow up at the end of the year like they always do. But being, what are they, 3 points behind Bayern? Because Bayern can't win a game lately.
Right.
I see them looking at this game and thinking that they got to take this one. And I think they do.
Yeah, it's weird. Freiburg started out so hot. They've got 34 points, so they're safe for sure. It'll be interesting to see if they can hold on to a Europa League spot, you know, by the end of the season. And so let's talk about your club for a second, because there was a rumor for a minute that Luca Waldschmidt, center forward, was going to be loaned from Wolfsburg to Stuttgart. It turned out not to happen, but you and I were talking off the air, as they say, which sounds so professional. You were really talking me into him. Do you think this was a loss for...
I think it's a loss for Stuttgart to lose him. Waldschmidt was one of my favorite players when I first started following the team. He was a young kid. He was playing on the team. And he was one of those guys that I would text you and Jeff all the time, all caps, Waldschmidt, because he was always scoring. And he's not a great first option he's a great like second or third option. He's very good at getting into the attacking third, getting the ball up to the main person on your team, and then putting himself in a position to get a deflection or be in the right spot for, you know, a pass back to him. He's a very smart player, and I think he would have fit very well with Stuttgart.
Yeah, and there were a lot of Stuttgart supporters who were excited about a loan for him. I just didn't know where he would play, as Matt and I discussed on the club. And maybe Wolfsburg didn't want to loan him. You know, Wolfsburg's, you know, they're in seventh place. They've got a chance for Europa League at this point. Maybe he'll come in handy for them.
Well, the thing is, it's like we tried him, Freiburg, I should say, tried him at striker a few times, and it wasn't great, it wasn't bad, but I could see with how many midfield type of players Stuttgart has, where he would fit in and where he would get time. It would be really difficult to see.
Let's talk about a game that could be difficult to see. We got Frankfurt, which is sixth place on the table. They are hosting Hertha Berlin, which is just tons of chaos. Their sporting director is gone. A number of their transfers fell through. They're 17th place on the table right now, but they're only 2 points behind Stuttgart. Frankfurt is the favorite at home by a goal. How do you see this one wrapping up?
This is probably the easiest prediction for me all week. I'm taking Frankfurt in this one. I have no faith in Hertha right now. They're just like you said, they're in disarray.
Yeah, I don't know what Hertha we're going to see. It could be a case where they rally together and they get a result, or it could just be where it's a 6-1 loss. I don't know. Yeah, speaking of 6-1 losses, Jeff's team, frequently on the podcast, is hosting Leipzig. So Cologne is hosting Leipzig, but Cologne, the home team, is an underdog by half a goal. Cologne has been one of the more fun teams to watch this season. I don't know which Cologne we're going to see. Sometimes they blow people out. Sometimes they get blown out. Leipzig is third on the table with 35 points. Cologne is 12th on the table. It seems like Cologne is totally safe, but it's crazy. They're only two losses away from being back in the relegation fight.
Yeah, this is tough because Hennes, as you said, they drew against Schalke, but they also draw against like Bayern this year. So it's like the matchup doesn't seem to play into that, but they also get, you know, the 7-1 result against Bremen, who you guys are playing, and you just don't understand them. But Leipzig, they could be a really championship contender, maybe. I mean, they're still in the fight. I think this is one of those games where, you know, Jeff is just going to be texting us the whole game, just going, what's going on? And I think Leipzig takes it.
Yeah, it's funny because Jeff, who is the Cologne supporter and a member of the podcast, is also a San Francisco 49ers NFL supporter. Things went very bad for them, so he has not been texting us much lately over the last few days. So if this match this weekend goes bad, we may not hear from Jeff until March, you know, at this point.
We'll have to do a wellness check on him at some point.
Let's go Union Berlin. They won their derby versus Hertha Berlin. They just, as we record this, defeated Wolfsburg in the Pokal, so they move on to the Elite Eight. They're hosting Mainz. So Union is the surprise darling of the league, second place on the table, 36 points. Mainz isn't 23 points, 11th on the table. This is a tough one, I think. I think Union is the easy money. They're favored by half a goal. What do you think?
I would take that. Union's won three straight games against bottom table teams, and well, in Mainz, they lost to Schalke, so you can't trust that.
Speaking of Schalke, we got them on the road at Gladbach. Schalke, not surprisingly, is the underdog. They're last place on the table. They've got the worst goal differential in the league. They're playing a Gladbach team that is eighth on the table, 25 points. They're still close enough to Europa. Gladbach is favored by a full goal. You got it. What would it take for you to take Schalke as an underdog? Two goals? Three goals? What do you think the score is going to be?
I would, geez, probably three. I'd say a 4-1 result would, and that would be a push. But yeah, Gladbach's one of those teams that you try to give up on them, and they just keep coming back up the table. They just keep coming. And so I got to take Gladbach in this one.
Yeah, I liked Hoffenheim against them, but Gladbach beat up on them. I thought when they lost Jan Sommer, they would fall apart a bit, but they've been doing okay. So then we've got on Sunday, we've got Wolfsburg hosting Bayern Munich. The spread on this one is only Wolfsburg plus a goal. Wolfsburg just lost to Union Berlin over the course of the week. Bayern did not play this week because they aren't going to play, I think, until next week for their Pokal match. I mean, this is almost like the Schalke-Gladbach match. Are you Wolfsburg plus a goal? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, Wolfsburg has been really – they got me confused lately because they scored – before last week, they scored 11 goals in their previous two games. And so you just don't know which Wolfsburg's going to show up. I would love to see them get a draw, obviously, you know, to keep everyone else in the fight. So I think I'm taking Wolfsburg in this game. I'm hoping for a draw.
Yeah, the last one. Now, I hesitate to even ask you about the Stuttgart match because of the four of us, myself, you, Jeff, and Matt, you have the worst prediction record on the podcast. Only six wins and 17 guesses. So whatever you pick, it's probably the opposite's going to happen. So we got Stuttgart is at home. They're favored by half a goal versus Bremen. On the table, as we know, Stuttgart is 15th on the table with 16 points. Bremen had a nice win. They're 24 points, 10th on the table. Where would you put your money on this one?
Well, first, let me give you a couple stats that I found interesting.
Ooh.
Bremen has only scored more than three times all year, and they're 2-1 in those games. And they have 4 wins, 2 ties when scoring 2 goals. When scoring only 1 goal, they are 1-1-4. So I think if Stuttgart could keep these guys under 2 goals, I think Stuttgart takes the game. But with that said, I'm taking Bremen in this game.
Thank God. Yeah, I do agree with you that whenever Bremen plays a team that plays super defensive, it is a super tight 1-goal difference game. Who knows what's going to happen, you know, in this one, but I'm very happy that you picked Bremen in this one and not us because you're of your track record. All right. So
and I obviously was not influenced by your previous statement.
No, thank you. All right. So 9 matches coming up this weekend. If you are going to pick the Austin lock of the week, where we put our mortgage, kids' college fund, everything on, which match would it be?
For the mental stability of this podcast and everybody who listens, I'm going to say Bremen is my lock of the week.
All right, folks. Well, you heard it there first. Austin's first welcome back to the podcast in 2023 in style. Oz, thanks so much. Hopefully, like usual, you're wrong.
I hope so too. Have a great one.
Talk to you next time.